The Radio Memories Network is brought to you in part by Liberated Syndication, podcast publishing made easy, libsyn.com. That's libsyn.com.
Yesterday USA Superstation.
The Radio Memories Network welcomes you to the programs of the Yesterday USA Superstation, now available as podcasts. Sit back, close your eyes, and remember.
All thanks for the memory of the community chest once more.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ron Hughes, and welcome to Thanks for the Memories. Here's Jack Armstrong from December 4th, 1940.
Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Wave the flag for us and high, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champion, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling adventures of Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Say, here's something for every young athlete to think about. Today, this very day, is a good time to start getting ready for the 1941 football season opening up next fall. Yes, I mean every word I say. Right now is the time for you to get in training for the job you hope to have on your school team next year. You see, plenty of famous athletes and coaches agree that training is a year-round proposition. Of course, you can't expect to build your natural ability up to champion performance overnight. You want a head start to help yourself get really ready. And now is the time to get it. Pick a good sound training program for yourself and stick to it day after day and month after month. And I don't think we'll have to worry about you not being in condition when the call goes out for football practice next season. Now, don't get me wrong. A good training program for you to follow all year round doesn't need to be a hard grind or a lot of extra work. What you want is a basic training system that fits right into your daily schedule. One that's easy and pleasant to follow, like the three famous training rules of Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Here's what to do. First, get plenty of fresh air, sleep, and exercise. Second, use lots of soap and water every day to help yourself keep clean and well. Third, eat a real athlete's training breakfast every morning. A big bowl full of nourishing whole wheat, those crunchy flakes called Wheaties, with lots of milk or cream and your favorite kind of fruit. Now, that's all there is to it. But take it from me, you'll never know how downright good a training breakfast can be till you tie into that big bowl full of Wheaties and enjoy real whole wheat that's been flaked and toasted and made into the grandest tasting dish a fellow or girl could ask for. No wonder they call that Wheaties milk and fruit combination a breakfast of champions. It's got everything to make it a genuine champion training dish. Keen flavor, honest-to-goodness satisfaction, and all the well-known important nourishment of the whole wheat grain, a food that's especially recommended in the diet of athletes. Yes, sir, you're going to get a brand new kick out of training for your favorite sports when you start your day with that year-round breakfast of champions and help yourself to lots of Wheaties. And now, Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Billy, Betty, and Uncle Jim are on a dangerous trail high up in the mountains of Luzon in the Philippines. Jagged peaks rise to one side of their car, and on the other side, sheer cliffs drop straight down to the green gorges below. They're in the country of the Igorots, some of whom are notorious headhunters, and they're in search of a constabulary sergeant who has information on the missing Professor Loring. As Uncle Jim carefully guides the car over boulders on the narrow mountain road, Jack and Billy keep a lookout to the rear. They know that they're being followed by the unscrupulous adventurer, Dr. Chapato, with Lazaro and Blackbeard and others of his crew. Chapato is trying to steal an important chart and luminous ring which Uncle Jim has, and which he hopes will guide him to a rich cargo of precious uranium-235 lost from Professor Loring's ship when it was wrecked in the Sulu Sea. Betty would keep a lookout to the rear, too, but right now her heart is in her mouth as she looks at the dangerous trail ahead. Listen.
I think we will, Betty. It made others just as bad.
But the road just keeps to go right over
white, Betty. See? It turns sharply to the right.
Gee, Willikins, Uncle Jim. That car ought to be hinged in the middle to make this turn.
Don't get too far to the left, Uncle Jim, or we'll slide off the edge of this vertical cliff.
Why, Jack, with all this backseat driving, how could I ever go over the cliff?
I'm sorry, Uncle Jim. But if you sat back here and looked out of the window and saw nothing but a 1,000-foot drop under you, well, you couldn't help feeling nervous.
Uncle Jim, I can't see anything to the left of us but empty space.
Hear that, Betty? I'm scraping the mountainside on our right. I can't get over any further than that.
Well, we made it. But if I'd have stepped out of the left-hand door of this car, I'd have stepped right off the cliff.
I see why they don't ordinarily use automobiles in this part of the Philippines. Man, would die of heart failure every time he made a trip.
The road isn't usually this bad, Jack. This is the rainy season, and there have been lots of landslides from the steep slopes.
Well, there's another landslide ahead of us right across the road.
Uh-oh, looks like some more shovel work for us, Billy.
Gosh, I'll say. That's the fourth one this morning. Wish the mountains would stay put in one place.
Betty and I'll shovel this slide off the road, Jack. You and Billy can enjoy the mountain scenery for a while.
Nothing doing, Uncle Jim. Shoveling's our job. You and Betty can keep a lookout for any kind of Chapado and Blackbeard.
We should have brought four shovels, Billy, instead of two. Then we could all work.
Well, I don't know where we would have put them, Betty. We've already got our valises, some block and tackle, some spare cans of gasoline, cooking equipment, and a couple of tents in this car.
Get out, Billy, and we'll start shoveling.
Chapado and Blackbeard and the others can't be so very far behind.
We'll get out too, Betty. We're almost at the top of this mountain range. There should be some grand scenery around us.
All I could do with just a little less scenery and a little more road, Uncle Jim. Oh, my, it is a wonderful sight, isn't it? We must be almost on top of the world.
We're certainly just about on top of the Philippines.
It's almost uninhabited, isn't it? I haven't seen an Igorot for a long time.
The Igorot tribes are mountain tribes, Betty, but they don't live this high up. Are you sure you don't want any help, Jack?
Not a bit, Uncle Jim. Here's your shovel, Billy. Let's get to work.
Yeah, shoveling landslides are swell for the biceps, Jack. The muscles of my arms bulge every time I even look at a shovel. Well, here goes.
There's just one thing I don't like about this shoveling. We're clearing the road so that Chapado and Lazaro and Blackbeard can catch up with us all the quicker.
Gosh, yes. Hey, Betty, why don't you and Uncle Jim start a landslide behind the car to block Chapado and his bunch?
Oh, I wish we could. Isn't there some way we could start a landslide, Uncle Jim?
You're playing with dynamite when you start a landslide, Betty. Sometimes a small slide starts a big one. And before you know it, the whole side of the mountain comes down.
Besides, we just have to move it all away when we come back.
Uncle Jim, look down in the valley. Isn't that the same road we've just come up?
That's the one, Betty. See how it twists and turns all the way up the mountain?
Well, then Chapado and Blackbeard can't be very close behind us, or we'd be able to see them coming up the road down below.
We know they haven't started to climb this mountain yet, but they're not far behind us.
Gosh, this shoveling is hot work, even when you're 6,000 feet up in the air.
I'll spell you for a while, Billy. I need the exercise anyway.
Oh, thanks, Uncle Jim. I'll get my second wind in just a minute. Here's a shovel.
You take a rest, too, Jack. This is back-breaking work.
Oh, I'm doing fine, Uncle Jim. I'm not tired yet.
Jiminy, these are some mountains. Do the headhunters live up here, Uncle Jim?
Not this high up, Billy. They stay on the plateaus and in the stream bottoms like the rest of the Igorot tribes.
Oh, we'll soon be among them, won't we, Uncle Jim?
We've been among them all day, Betty. All of the Igorots we've seen today used to be headhunters. Most of them are tamed down now.
But all of these tribes aren't tamed, are they, Uncle Jim?
No, Billy, they're not. When we get over this mountain range, we'll be among the tribes that are giving trouble. That's why some of the Philippine constabulary were sent up here.
Suffering catfish. I hope that sergeant we're looking for has everything well in hand. With Chapado and Blackbeard behind us and some ferocious headhunters in front of us, you'll be in a sweet pickle. Here, Uncle Jim, let me take your shovel now.
You spell Jack for a while, Billy. He's been doing all the work while we've been talking.
Thanks, Billy. I can use the rest now.
Okay, I'll finish it up, Jack. There's not much of that landslide left.
Flip over that cliff, Billy. A good 1,000-foot drop there.
Okay.
The mountain goes up quite a bit above us, too. The trees aren't so thick.
Well, they're thick enough to hide people. I'm glad the headhunters don't live this high up.
Uncle Jim, look up the mountainside. Right near that large forked tree.
Oh, I see the tree, Jack. I don't see anything else.
He's gone now. He's disappeared. But I saw him quite plainly for a second.
What did you see, Jack? A headhunter?
Gee, who is Jack? Don't tell me there are headhunters up there laying for us.
He wasn't a headhunter, Billy. At least he didn't look like a Igorot. He was small, awfully small, and he looked quite dark.
But what was he doing, Jack?
I only saw him for a second. He seemed to be watching.
Oh, I bet you were just seeing things, Jack.
He was seeing things all right, Billy. He saw a Negrito.
A
Negrito?
Don't look so alarmed. Unless you make an enemy of a Negrito, he's quite harmless.
But what are Negritos, Uncle Jim?
They're the real first families of the Philippines, Betty. They're the aboriginal people who lived here thousands of years ago. At one time, they lived all over the Philippines.
Up in June, then what are they doing way up here in the tops of the mountains?
When the seagoing Malays invaded the Philippines, they chased the aboriginal Negritos away from the coast into the interior. Then later, as the Malays spread to the interior and other races came and invaded the Philippines, the Negritos retreated back into the mountains. And then Igorotes and others came into the mountains, and the Negritos were driven back to the highest parts of the mountains. And they've been there ever since.
There's another one. I see him.
I see him too, Betty. Oh, he's disappeared now. When Cricket says another one. Now he's disappeared.
And there's still another one. Look at him. He's got a bow and arrow.
They probably all have bows and arrows, Jack. That's the only weapon they ever carry. And sometimes they use poisoned arrows.
Poisoned arrows?
That's right. Poisoned arrows.
But Uncle Jim, aren't they dangerous?
The arrows are dangerous, Betty, but the Negritos aren't. Unless they think we're their enemy, they won't do anything but watch us.
Boy, I hope they don't think we're their enemy.
Their only natural enemy is the Igorote, Jack. Strangely enough, they feel that the white man is their friend. I guess that's because the white man has had to fight some of the headhunting Igorotes.
I can't see a single one now. They disappeared like magic.
They're still up there. They're extremely curious.
And they're so small. Why, I don't believe they're any taller than I.
They've become dwarfed by centuries of living in the mountaintops, Betty. But they're tough little creatures. They don't wear a thing but a loincloth made of grass. And yet the cold mountain nights don't bother them a bit.
How many of you suppose are up there watching us, Uncle Jim?
Probably a whole tribe. They hunt as a tribe. They never stay in one place. They roam all over the mountains. Sometimes they come down at night to the rice paddies, which the Igorotes cultivate on the lower mountainsides, and steal their rice. But during the day, they stay high up.
Look, there's one coming close. See him peeping out behind that tree? Oh, there, he saw me pointing at him. He's skipping back. What a funny little man.
We'd better get the rest of this road cleared and get going. Don't forget that Chipato and Blackbeard are following us.
Gee whiz, I'd forgotten all about them. Come on, Jack, let's finish it up.
Let's take a look down below first. They may have started up this road while we were watching the Negritos.
I don't see any sign of them, Jack, and we can see the road winding down for miles.
I guess they haven't come to this mountain yet. Wait a minute. What's that? Way down there where the road follows that stream in the valley.
What's that, Jack? Do you see something?
I thought I did. I thought I saw something moving along that road, but I don't see it now.
Jump by Jiminy, I see it, Jack. It is something moving on the road.
Where, Billy? I don't see a thing.
Billy, it's way down below us, Betty. See where the stream makes a sharp bend just below the curved lines of that rice paddy on the mountainside?
Well, I see the road, but it's so far away, I can't see. Oh, yes, I can. There's something moving on the trail. Oh, but it doesn't look like an automobile.
Just the same, it is an automobile, Betty. It's moving too fast for anything else.
It's an automobile, all right, Jack. And that means it's Chipato and Lazaro and Blackbeard.
Then what are we waiting for? Come on, Jack. Let's get the rest of this road all cleared up.
Give me your shovel, Billy. I can shovel faster than you can. Come on, Jack. Pitch into it.
Boy, oh boy, just watch me.
Billy, look up the mountainside. There are lots of Negritos now.
Gosh, whiz, why, they're coming from behind all the trees.
And they're wondering what suddenly happened to us. Look, Billy, every one of them has a bow and arrow.
They've got dozens of arrows, Betty, every one of them. I can see them in their quivers.
Uncle Jim, look at the Negritos. They're edging down the side of the mountain. They're closing in on us.
I haven't time to watch them, Betty. Jack and I have to get this road clear.
But they're getting closer and closer. Oh, I don't like it.
Billy, you and Betty get in the car. Don't think these Negritos mean any harm. If I'm wrong, you'll be safer from those arrows in the car.
I'll get the engine started, Uncle Jim. We can get going a second or two. Come on, Betty.
Okay.
We've all got the road cleared off enough, Uncle Jim.
Help me push this one boulder over, Jack, and then we can go.
All right. I'll take this end of the boulder, Uncle Jim.
All right, Jack. There, that does it. Now into the car, Jack, quick. Move over, Billy. I'll take the wheel.
Oh, Uncle Jim,
don't worry, Betty. They'll not try to harm us unless we do something to anger them.
But, Uncle Jim, what'll we do if we run into another landslide?
Say, what will they do if they're blocked by another landslide? Chipato and Blackbeard and the others will certainly catch up with them then. And what about those Negritos? Are they really as friendly as Uncle Jim says? There's going to be lots of things happening in those Philippine mountains soon, and you won't want to miss the excitement. So listen in, all of you, at the same time tomorrow for another thrilling episode of The Country of the Headhunters with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Now, I'm leaving the proposition squarely up to you. If it's a real champion athlete's breakfast you want, one that's tops with plenty of sport champions all year round, be sure to ask for Wheaties.
A big bowl full of Wheaties with lots of milk and a glass of fruit juice. That's your breakfast of champions every day this winter.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Won't you try Wheaties?
This is Franklin McCormick saying goodbye until tomorrow for General Mills, makers of Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions, who have just presented another episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
The best breakfast food in the land. Wave the pipe for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champ.
Part of the interview was Jack French. And Jack French, welcome back to Yesterday USA.
Thank you very much, Walter.
Let's talk about the title of your book, and let's go ahead and mention the website and maybe the topic of it.
Of course. The title is Private Eyelashes, Radio's Lady Detectives. And this is being marketed by Ben Ulmert, who runs Bear Manor Media. That's a lovely little publishing firm up in Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania. And he specializes in books about old-time radio or old movies. So he's the publisher of this book.
And let's give out the website and maybe a snail mail, considering not everybody has a computer nowadays. Hard to believe, but there are some people out there that listen to it that do not have one.
Absolutely. Bear Manor Media is Post Office Box 750 in Bowlesburg, and that's spelled B-O-A-L-S-B-U-R-G, Pennsylvania, and the zip code is 16827. And you can buy this book by sending them $18.95 plus $2 to handle shipping and handling. And, of course, for those of you who not only have a computer, but you're very experienced on the Internet, you can buy it online. And the website where you can purchase it is the publisher's website, and it's www.bearmanormedia.com. And maybe I had to explain that name. Ben Ulmert is a fan of panda bears. So he named his publishing house kind of the House of the Panda, or in this case, Bear Manor Media. So I'll repeat those later in the program.
You bet. How in the world did you come up with the idea for the book?
Well, I've always been interested in detective mysteries. And I've been researching and writing about radio for more than 30 years. And about 20 years ago, somebody gave me a copy of Candy Matson. And this is the first lady detective I've ever heard of. And I said to the dealer, were there other female detectives? And he said, yeah, I think there were one or two, maybe. There was a Miss Sherlock and I think a Miss Pinkerton. That's about all. So I started asking around and researching and making inquiries of other people and slowly began to build up some knowledge on about 10 different lady detectives. And at that point, I started writing articles for various old-time radio publications. And that, in effect, got other people to write me suggesting other ones I could look into. And, of course, research in old-time radio is always a cooperative endeavor. And the people who are researching a given genre are then contacted by others who will suggest in a program, maybe even send them a tape or a Xerox of a radio article they ran across. So that's the way my research built up on this topic.
Now, did you go to some of the libraries? I imagine there's some of the famous one down in Maryland that you're not too far from. Did you get a chance to go in and look up some of the library, or was it all pretty much looking up, you know, the microfilms and stuff like that to get some?
Well, I want to concentrate on primary resource material, and that would be, first of all, the audio recordings of the shows themselves. And most of these shows have at least one surviving copy that you can go to. Second best one is the scripts themselves, if you can locate those. And then the third would be talking to some of the people that actually worked on those shows and let them fill in some of the details. And our difficulty, of course, in old-time radio research is every year we have fewer people to talk to. There's fewer scripts to find, and the audio recordings, the numbers stay pretty much the same.
What about the scripts? That must have been sort of a fascinating history by itself, trying to track them down.
It was. And our problem in that is simply that we don't know where these scripts are. The libraries themselves know what they have, but there is no universality of indexing in terms of a great inventory. You can go to any library in the country, and in the Interbook Library Club, they can punch it in a computer and they'll say, oh yes, that book is available at the University of Colorado Library. We'll order it for you. But the scripts aren't in these archives. So some of my, I found, and you've already mentioned the source, which is the Library of American Broadcasting at the University of Maryland. They have extensive resources there. I was able to find five scripts from Kitty Keene Detective, which was very helpful to me. And, of course, they have bound copies of the standard radio periodicals from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, including Radio Guide, Radio Mirror, Radio Life, etc. But those are not indexed either. You have to go through each magazine page by page.
And then I imagine you eventually had someone come out and look at the Thousand Oaks Library, too.
Yes, I did. I was very fortunate in that. I kind of just issued an appeal. Did it through the Spurtback newsletter, Radiogram, and I said I need somebody to do some research for me at Thousand Oaks Library. They have not only all the scripts on Candy Matson, but they also had the scripts on Sandra Martin, Lady of the Press, and I did get a volunteer. It was fortunate for me because a year prior, Stuart Wright, who's an old-time radio researcher in Colorado, had gone out and cataloged all the Candy Matson scripts, but he didn't have time to read individual ones. But I used Stewart's summary, and then I picked out the scripts I specifically wanted read word for word. And a gentleman out in the Thousand Oaks, Barry Weiss, did that for me.
Well, how many detectives did you cover in the book?
Well, there are a total of 14 lady detectives who operated on their own. And when I first discussed this with my publisher about 18 months ago, he said, well, 14 detectives isn't enough for a book. So we discussed the genre, and he said, tell you what, why don't you include all the women who acted in a detective capacity, in a crime-fighting capacity, even though they were partnered with a male? And that would, of course, include all the husband and wife teams, the Gal Fridays, the secretaries, etc. So once we extended the book to include every lady crime solver acting in a partnership relationship, that bumped it up to 44 network series.
Here's Green Gill Players from August 13, 1945.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players in RKO Radio Pictures' delightful comedy, Gildersleeve's Bad Day. It stars Harold Perry in his famous screen and radio character, the Great Gildersleeve, supported by his well-known cast of characters. The Lady Esther, Screen Guild Players in Gildersleeve's Bad Day. men and true, there comes now to certain citizens of Summerfield the call.
Got a summons for you. Jury duty tomorrow morning. Judge Hooker's court.
It's the case of the state versus Louis Barton, who was caught while robbing the First National Bank. And to some of Louis's faithful pals, the impending trial spells double trouble.
I see the afternoon paper, well. They give Louis the whole front page.
Do they know they're going to get him towed unless we do something?
Like what?
Well, like this letter I took up today. Listen, Toad, get a load of this. Dear sir, if you can persuade yourself and the other juries that Louis Barton is not guilty, there will be $1,000 in United States currency delivered to you immediately after Louis is sprung. Signed, anonymous.
Oh, going to send it to one of the jurors, huh?
Well, next.
Yeah, but which one? Suppose we picked the wrong character, and he's ethical to the extent of putting us where Louis is.
We will pick the wrong one. I got the jury list right here. Let's see. Richard Peavy?
No, he owns the drugstore. He probably don't need the dough.
Oh. Mr. Henry Potter? Nah. He won't be thinking of money. The paper says you're getting married tonight.
Oh.
Now, here's a name. Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
Throckmorton P. Are you kidding?
That's what it says here. Throckmorton P.
Don't go no further, Al. I heard enough. Well, any guy with a label like that, I'll bet 8-1 that guy's our pigeon.
And besides, they found poison in the food. Enough poison to kill everybody in the house. And they proved an innocent man had been wrongly convicted. What do you say to that?
Mr. Gildersleeve, you want your eggs boiled?
Yes, please, Bertie. Then there's the case of State versus Minnie Hoffberger, Boston, 1923. Minnie was accused of throwing her husband out of a third-story window. He lit on a pile of coal.
Hard of soul.
That's beside the point, Bertie. It was a pile of coal.
I mean the eggs, Mr. Gilsey.
Oh, the eggs. About 4 minutes, Bertie. If you can do it in three, so much the better.
Morning, Uncle Mort.
Well, good morning, Leroy. Now, Bertie, to continue.
A letter for you, Uncle. It was in the mailbox.
Letter? Thank you, my boy. Let's see. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. The defendant was on the stand undergoing cross-examination. Isn't it true that you discussed the possibility of murdering your husband?
Huh?
Well, isn't it?
Mr. Gildersleeve, I ain't even married.
Answer the question. Answer the question, yes or no?
No, sir.
Your witness, sir.
Mine?
I mean, she may step down.
Mr. Gildersleeve, I ain't even up.
Hey, Aunt, you're not going to be the district attorney in this trial. You're just going to be a juror.
Be quiet, Leroy, quiet. Besides, what's more important than a juror? Especially one with my legal background.
Yeah, I guess your background's pretty important when all you have to do is sit.
Yep. That's beside the point, Leroy. And furthermore...
Somebody's honking outside.
Uncle Mort, Judge Hooker and your Share the Ride group are waiting out front.
They are? Bertie, never mind the eggs. Just pour me a slice of toast. I mean, slice me a cup of coffee. Oh, forget it. I'll go along as I am.
In the bathrobe?
I promised I'd be ready with... Huh? Silly me. My coat's in the hall. Here, Marjorie, I'll leave this robe with you.
Good idea, Uncle Mort. I plan to send it to the cleaner today.
Oh, I'll have to rush. Goodbye, everybody, and wish me luck.
Why should we have to wish him luck? Uncle Mort's not on trial.
No, but the trial isn't over yet.
Now, sir, your name is Louis Barton.
Well,
I object. What you object? Now, look, Gildersleeve, you're just a juror.
Your Honor, he was asking a leading question.
Quiet.
In Section 364 of the Penal Code, it specifically states...
Quiet, Throckmorton, and sit down.
Old goat.
Prosecutor will continue.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. Now then, will the defendant please tell the court his name?
My name's Louis Barton.
And your occupation?
Explosives engineer.
Oh, I see. I see. And, of course, that accounts for your possession of a bottle of nitroglycerin when arrested in the alley back of the First National Bank on the night of...
I object! Your Honor, this is too much. Is this juror acting as defense counsel, too?
If it pleases Your Honor...
Silence!
But, Your Honor, it's not been proved that the defendant had nitroglycerin in his possession.
and the bottle in question has not been introduced as evidence. According to Section 300...
Black Martin Gildersleeve, you will return to your seat and listen to the evidence, or this court will find you in contempt.
But, Horace, at your...
Sit down!
Yes, sir.
District Attorney will proceed.
They're hanging an innocent man.
Leroy, do you think Uncle Mort will be on the jury very long? Not if the jury has anything to say about it. Gee, I hope they'll be free soon, Marge. We need them to help us raise money for the canteen fund.
Mm-hmm. Uncle's done better than anyone. He got Mrs. Hastings to pledge $1,000. She's going to send it over tomorrow.
Gee, that's swell. $1,000. I mean, what we raised at the dance and on the program.
And our home front drive.
Home front drive? What's that?
That was Mary Ellen's idea. You see, you go to the butcher and the grocer and people like that, and you say, we think you ought to give 10% of all the business you get from us this week. You can raise a lot of money that way.
Why don't you just get a gun?
Don't be silly. It's for charity. Here, help me check this bundle for the cleaners. Uncle Mort's blue suit and his brown suit and his cutaway.
He hasn't worn that since Hoover was elected.
Well, you can't tell. The Republicans might win again someday. His sport coat, his gray suit.
Hey, that gray suit was just cleaned last week.
Leroy, don't be petty. Another cleaning won't hurt it a bit. Smoking jacket, bathrobe.
Oh, hold it, Marge. Something just dropped out of the bathrobe pocket. Look, a letter. I wonder...
Don't you dare open that letter, Leroy.
Yeah, I wouldn't open it. It's open already. You know, Uncle Mort was wearing this robe at breakfast.
Leroy.
Well, after all, it might be important, and he might have forgotten it in the rush and being tied up in the jury. He might want us to... Holy smoke.
What's the matter?
Get a load of this. If you can persuade yourself and the other jurors that Louis Barton is not guilty, gee, somebody's trying to bribe Uncle Mort.
Why, that's ridiculous.
No, it's anonymous. He's offering $1,000.
$1,000 or $1,000,000, it wouldn't do any good. And Leroy, you can just forget that letter. Uncle Mort is as honest as the day is long. He'll be the first one to send that crook to jail.
Sure he will, Marge. Sure he will. I hope.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but I must be honest with myself. I find I'm still forced to vote not guilty.
Oh, but Gildersleeve, we're 11-1 for conviction. After all, man, the evidence...
The evidence is purely circumstantial. I'll leave it to Mr. Peavy here.
Oh, I didn't say that. The man was caught right there in the bank.
That makes no difference. Anybody might walk into a bank, even me. This fellow is simply a victim of circumstances.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. He's already served 3 terms for robbery.
This has nothing to do with the case, Peavy. Remember, there were no fingerprints. There was no loot found on his person. No corpus delicti.
Oh, Gildersleeve, you don't know what you're talking about. We're 11-1. Now vote for conviction and let's get out of here.
Mr. Potter, this is a matter of justice.
That's what I say. I got to get back to my drugstore.
Peavy, you can get somebody else to take care of your drugstore.
Yes, but what about me? I was married last night. What about my wife?
Anybody else got any questions?
How about it, gents? Any decision yet?
Not yet, bailiff. We're still tied up.
It's midnight, gents. You gonna stay out all night?
We will if Gildersleeve has his way.
It's after 2, gents. You gonna be much longer?
Well, I wouldn't say too much longer, bailiff. I think we're beginning to see eye to eye.
Hello? Huh? Yeah, this is Judge Hooker. What's the idea, bailiff? It's 3 in the morning. Oh, you reached a decision, huh? All right. I'll get dressed and come over. Gentlemen of the jury, have you arrived at a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. We find the defendant not guilty.
Did you say not guilty?
Mm-hmm. That's right, Judge.
Very well. The defendant is discharged.
Thanks, Your Honor.
Thanks, fellas. Gentlemen, I don't have to tell you my opinion of this verdict. How 12 men could so utterly disregard
the evidence. We want to convict him, Judge, but Gildersleeve convinced us of a reasonable doubt.
Oh, Gildersleeve. Well, I'm convinced of a reasonable doubt myself.
Oh, are you, Horace? Are you really?
Yes, a reasonable doubt of my own sanity in ever having let you serve as a juror in this court. That's all, gentlemen. The jury is dismissed.
Well, we done it, Louie. We done it, all right.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Told me we sprung you. We got you out of that rap.
Huh?
Yeah, sure, sure. That fat guy on the jury, Gildersleeve. We got to him for a grand. That's why he held out.
Yeah, that's why it took us so long.
No kidding? Well, boys, that was swell. And your pal Louie ain't gonna... Where'd you get the grand?
Oh, we just promised it to him.
Yeah, sure. We never had no real intentions.
Now, wait a minute. You say you promised the guy a grand?
Yeah.
Then the guy gets a grand. Louie, are you nuts?
No, I'm ethical. The guy did like you told him, didn't he? He kept his part of the deal, didn't he? So we keep ours. Louis Barton ain't no Wilkes.
But we ain't got the grand.
So we get a grand. It's early yet, and I know just the spot.
But Louis, you just got out of one rat.
You heard me. I said Louis Barton ain't no Wiltshire. Now, pipe down, both of you, and get out the tools.
The second act of the Lady Esther Screen Guild play will follow in a moment. Now, a word from Lady Esther.
Women who have tried Lady Esther Bridal Pink Face Powder tell me it's the most youthful and flattering shade I've ever achieved. They tell me they can actually see the years slip away, can see themselves become 10 years younger looking. I'd like you to try Bridal Pink for the first time on one cheek only. Compare it with any shade you've ever used. See the difference for yourself. See the fresh, young look it gives your skin. The soft, warm look, like the blush of a bride's young cheek. Lady Esther Bridal Pink is intensely flattering to almost every skin it touches. Whether your hair is blonde, brown, auburn, or black, Bridal Pink will instantly make you look more vital and alive, more youthful. Yes, and more daringly romantic. Lady Esther Face Powder is made differently. It's blown by the tremendous force and speed of hurricanes, and it's so highly pulverized that it's light and cool as a summer breeze on your face. It clings 4 hours and longer, completely covering tiny lines and blemishes, and the color is so vibrant, so alive, even your eyes light up. Your lips look more entrancing. Ask your dealer for Lady Esther Bridal Pink Face Powder. Accept no other powder, no other shade, for remember, only Lady Esther Bridal Pink can give you that radiant look, that happy, confident look, that look of a woman in love.
Presents the second act of Gildersleeve's Bad Day, starring Harold Perry as the great Gildersleeve. Well, it's later the same morning, considerably later, and glowing with a little sleep and a righteous sense of duty well done, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve comes down to breakfast.
Well, good morning, everybody. Beautiful morning. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning.
And Marjorie, my dear, how are you this morning?
I'm not quite sure. The papers say you set that criminal free last night.
Uh-huh. Good to know that justice isn't always blind. I like to think...
Uncle Mort, how could you?
Yes, I... How could I what?
A leading citizen, upright and respected, doing an awful thing like that.
What are you talking about?
Now you're stalling, Uncle. We saw the letter.
Letter? What letter? What in the world are you...
Go ahead, Marge. Show it to him. Here it is, Uncle Mort. It was in the pocket of your bathrobe.
Huh?
Go on, read it.
Yes, read it. Dear sir, if you can persuade yourself and the other jurors... But this isn't mine. I never saw this letter.
Are you kidding? You opened it.
You mean yesterday? That's right, I did open it. But I never read it.
Don't you remember, my dear, the carpool came by and I left in a rush?
That's true, Marge, you did. But Uncle Mort, you mean you never made a deal with this person?
Of course not. I held out for acquittal because I honestly believed the defendant was innocent.
Oh, Uncle Mort, I'm so glad.
Dear, my dear. You might at least have given me the benefit of the doubt. Just because you found that letter.
Oh, gee, we're sorry, Uncle Mort. It hurt us, too.
Yeah, well, next time, don't be so quick to judge.
Excuse me.
Yes, Bertie?
Man just left his envelope for you.
Well, thank you, Bertie. And you children needn't look so suspicious. I'll open it right now.
Holy smoke! Money!
$100 bills. And a note. Here is the money as promised.
Oh, Uncle Mort, and we believed you.
No, he wouldn't make a deal, not him.
Now, just a moment, you two. You don't really think that... Oh, this is awful. Fantastic. It's the most... Wait a minute. I know.
Yeah, so do we.
It's for Mrs. Hastings, for the canteen fund. She said she sent over $1,000 today.
Of course, that's it. Oh, Uncle Mort, I'm so sorry.
Hold on to your hats. Here we go again.
Leroy, this is no time for jokes. Once and for all, I want it plainly understood that I had nothing whatever to do with those crooks.
We're really sorry. We apologize.
Well, accept it. That leaves me only one thing to do.
What?
Take this money over to Judge Hooker's place. Isn't he chairman of the fund?
Gildersleeve, I shouldn't even be talking to you this morning. After the way you acted last night...
Now, Horace, that's not the right sort of attitude. I brought you a contribution to the canteen fund. $1,000 for Mrs. Hastings. Here you are.
Oh? Well, in that case, sorry I've been so touchy, Gilda. Not getting any sleep and all.
Sure, Horace, it's your old age. I understand that.
Put this money in the safe and I'll write you a receipt.
Yeah, Horace, the safe... Wouldn't it be better in the bank?
Why?
Well, I mean, that safe doesn't look very rugged to me.
Oh, nonsense, Gildy. Guaranteed to be burglar-proof. Got $1,000 of my own money in here.
Oh.
Yeah? I just put this envelope in my... Hey, that's funny.
Oh? What's the matter, Horace? Anything wrong?
Wrong? Wrong? Why, you simpering idiot, I've been robbed.
Yeah. Honestly, Peavy, you should have seen him. I thought Horace was going to blow a fuse. I'll have another cup of coffee, please.
That makes four altogether.
Yeah.
Were there any clues, Mr. Gellerstein?
Clues? Oh, lots of fingerprints. But they were all Judge Hooker's. I suggested they take Horace in on suspicion. Yeah, that's when he really got mad.
I can imagine. Well, I ought to trace that money pretty easy. I understand the judge kept a record of all the numbers of the bills.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's only natural. There were big bills, I hear. $10 $100 notes.
$10 $100.
Good afternoon, Mr. Peavy.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Hastings.
And Mr. Gildersleeve, how lucky for me. I was just going out to your place for this check.
Check?
Yes. For the canteen fund. $1,000.
$1,000.
Well, I promised it to you, don't you remember?
Oh, yes. I certainly. Thanks, Mrs. Peavy. Hastings. Thanks a lot. $1,000. I gotta rush now. A lot of things to do. Be seeing you sometime. Oh, brother, much obliged. Goodbye.
Such an odd man. But he must have so many things on his mind.
Well, he is odd, all right, Benny. Not too sure. He's got a mind.
Don't you see, Marjorie, it all adds up. If that $1,000 I got didn't come from Mrs. Hastings...
It must have come from someone else.
From those crooks.
Right. They must have thought I was playing their little game with them.
And they robbed Judge Hooker to pay you off.
Oh, brother. That's what makes it so bad. Horace has the numbers of those stolen bills. And when he checks that money I took to him...
He'll figure you're the one who robbed his safe.
Gee, aren't you in a spot? You could go to jail.
Leroy, don't mention that word. Oh, how do I get into these things?
Must be a talent.
Yeah.
Uncle Mort, what do you do? You can't deny you gave that money to Judge Hooker.
No.
And now it's in his safe. You can't get it out.
No. 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 I can't, can I? I can't get it out.
What is he got to laugh about? I guess it's a strain. Come on, Leroy. We better put him to bed.
I can't get it out, can I?
This is sure a swell idea, coming back to get that door again.
You're positive Fatso Gildersleeve brought it back here, Al?
Oh, yeah, yeah. After we left the Grand at his house, you see, we tailed him over here.
And we looked through the window, and there he is, handing it over to the judge. Gee, it seems like a lot to waste of effort.
Well, we want that safe once, we can do it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's getting to be a habit, Louie.
Yeah, watch your step, though. There's a copper sitting out in front in that towel car. The judge must ask for police protection.
Yeah, he needs it. I can hear that copper snoring clean over here.
Yeah, okay. Let's get in there. Hey. Hey, what's that?
What?
Somebody coming out of that window.
Gee, look. It's him. The same guy.
Yeah. That's so Gildersleeve.
Pretty smart plant, all right. He turns over the dough and then comes back here and lifts it. Only ain't gonna get away with it.
Yeah, what are we gonna do?
Take him for a ride.
But we ain't got no car.
So we get a car. You handle Fatso. Leave the rest to me.
Oh. Hello. Hello, headquarters. This is Judge Hooker. Yeah, I had a bad dream a few minutes ago. Woke me up and I went into the den to get a book and... No, there was no police car out in front. If there was, I wouldn't be calling you. Who cares what happened to your old police car? Somebody robbed my safe again.
Just keep your hands on the wheel, Fatso. Remember, there's three of us sitting back of you.
Yeah, three of us. And a gun.
Where are you making me drive to, gents?
Oh, to a nice quiet spot in the country, pal.
Is this trip absolutely necessary?
You know, Al, I think we used the suicide routine on him.
Suicide?
Yeah. You don't look too well anyway.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars.
Oh, this must be a police car.
Now, ain't that interesting?
Be on the lookout for police car 61. Police car 61. Stolen from in front of Judge Hooker's home.
And we could tell him where it is, too, you know? I hate that laugh.
Hey, that's right. We could. We really could.
Calling all cars. Calling all cars.
Hey, turn it off, Fatso. I heard enough.
Be on the lookout for police car 61.
Did you hear what I said?
Police car 61.
Hey, you.
Huh? Oh, turn it off.
Yes, sir. There's a switch on the dashboard.
Yes, sir. I see it. Got it right here.
All cars.
Now, they don't talk to us, and we don't talk to them.
Yeah, of course not. Not at all. Me. I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, driving police car 61.
Hey, is that guy nuts?
Singing on the way to his funeral.
Singing on the way to my funeral. I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, and I'm being taken for a ride. I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, and soon I will be dead.
The most amazing thing, Judge Hooker. That's why I sent for you. I'll tune in car 61 on the radio again. Now listen, Judge.
Singing on the way to my own funeral, singing on the way to my grave. You know, fellas, when the police find out that you robbed Judge Hooker's house two nights in a row, it's going to be pretty tough for you, Barton.
Louis Barton.
And how do you figure they'll find out, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Gildersleeve.
Oh, they'll find out, all right. Yes, sir. I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve on the beautiful Oak Post Road.
The Oak Post Road. Come on, Judge, we gotta hurry.
I am Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve on the beautiful Oak Post Road.
going far, far away.
He's giving me the creeps with that singing.
I'll let him enjoy himself while he can.
Thanks. And it won't be long now unless somebody helps me.
Yeah, with a voice like that, it won't be.
You know, well, it's kind of funny him singing like that. I think I better take a look at that. Sure, he's got that microphone on.
Hey! Hey, then I mean him every word we said.
Stop the car, you. Stop the car.
All right, brother, I will.
Stop! Don't try that wheel, no!
Spin the wheel, and when I woke up, I was here in the hospital.
Oh, Unky, you're wonderful.
You're terrific, Unc.
Well, it wasn't really anything at all. By the way, Horace, how are the three crooks?
They'll live to do a nice long stretch.
Great.
Uncle Mort, I'll bet you voted to let that guy go just so you could round up his pals.
Of course he did. I knew it all along.
Well.
How about it, Throckmorton? Was that it?
Well, everyone seems to be agreed. And you know me, Horace. I always go along with the majority.
Given us such a delightful half hour. Your appearance here tonight with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players has contributed a great deal to the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its country house, both largely supported by this radio program. Heard tonight in support of the great Gildersleeve were Walter Tetley as Leroy, Louise Erickson as Margie, Lillian Randolph as Bertie, Earl Ross as Judge Hooker, and Richard LeGrand as Mr. Peavy. Thanks again to all of you. And now, before we tell you about next week's show, here's a word from one of America's best-known beauty authorities, Lady Esther.
Do you know that women who think they take the best possible care of their skin often damage their skin most? For they use too many different kinds of preparations. The really best care of the skin is the modern, simplified method of one cream, as exemplified by Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream. It does the four things your skin needs most for beauty. First, Lady Esther Face Cream cleans your skin. Cleans it thoroughly, but gently. Second, it softens your skin. Absorbs the dry, clinging flakes that ruin the effect of makeup. Third, it helps nature refine the pores. Makes the texture of your skin look smoother and finer. And fourth, it leaves a perfect base on which powder clings longer and looks more glamorous. Yes, Lady Esther Face Cream, this one cream by itself, does all these four things. And a single application leaves your skin so smooth and fresh, so free of clinging dry flakes, that when you apply your face powder, the effect is truly beautiful. If you have the courage to look 10 years younger, if you have the courage to look daringly romantic, try this. First apply Lady Esther Face Cream. Wipe it off completely. Then apply Lady Esther Bridal Pink Face Powder. Bridal Pink, the shade that does so much for your appearance, that makes you look so much more radiant and alive. Ask for Lady Esther Four-Purpose Face Cream and Lady Esther Bridal Pink Face Powder.
Gene Tierney, Clifton Webb, David Bruce, and Dana Andrews. Be sure to listen. Harold Perry appeared through the courtesy of the Kraft Cheese Company. And his own show, The Great Gildersleeve, returns to the air September 2nd on another network. Gildersleeve's Bad Day was presented through the courtesy of RKO Radio Pictures. Music on tonight's program was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. You save enough on the largest size jar of Lady Esther Face Cream to buy a box of Lady Esther Face Powder. So remember, ask for the largest size. This is Ted Myers speaking for Lady Esther, saying thank you and good night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Screen Girl Players. I'm all ears, and may the good Lord Jesus Christ bless you. And this is Yesterday USA.
This is Frank Brzee reminding you that the Yesterday USA Radio Network is holding its annual fundraising event in a very short time. I know you'll want to become part of it and be an important part of keeping this network on the air. You can find out all about it by tuning in each night at 10:30 Eastern Time for Bill Bragg's live broadcast. He and Mike Handy will give you all the information about the fundraising auction. You'll be helping this station and yourself with some great programming.
Yesterday USA Superstation.
Right, you are Frank Brzee, and of course Frank comes your way live along with Walden Hughes every Friday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'll just tell you about the auction right now. We need you to send in something for us to auction off, and we need you to be here the last Sunday night of this month, November. That's November 27th, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Be here and buy something back. What should you send in? Well, anything that you would like. Anything that's easy to mail in. Anything that's in good taste. If you still don't know what to do, go to a national store like Walmart. Buy a gift certificate. Send that in. Here's the mailing address, 2001. That's 2001. 2001 Plymouth Rock Drive, Richardson, Texas. RICHARDSON, Richardson, Texas. The zip code is 75081 USA. And speaking of Walden Hughes, thank you, Walden, for a great job here on tape number 7. And before that, thank you, Rudy Stark. And have you checked out our website, yesterdayusa.com? When you get there, if you don't see something brand spanking new, you need to refresh. You'll be excited when you do. You will be excited when you do. And don't forget to listen to tape number 8 for the new kid on the block. It's the Spurred Fact Radio Theater. It's all new, and it's right here on Yesterday USA. This is the tail end of tape number 7 for the 2-week period that began on the 7th day of November.